You're listening to another.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It's April 24th, 2015, but here in New York, you never know it by the thermometer. It feels more like maybe March or February. But in any event, it's always great joining you at the end of the week to play that infamous game of catch-up. And given the state of the world and our nation, there's always lots to catch up with. Those of you familiar with me know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the INS, the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And I'm continuing, if you will, on my mission to call attention to as many of my fellow Americans and as many of our leaders, so-called, as possible, to remind them, perhaps educate them, about just how critical America's borders and immigration laws are. They are, after all, our first and last line of defense against transnational criminals, international terrorists, and other folks from around the world who would do harm to the United States. And it's important to make the point that it is not an anti-immigrant position to say that we want the borders secured or immigration laws enforced. Point of fact, the same laws that tell us who to kick out and who to keep out, and that involves aliens, as I started saying, that pose a threat to our safety, aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who suffer severe mental illness and are prone to violence or are sex offenders, aliens who have committed serious crimes, you know, murder, arson, rape, robbery, gun trafficking, narcotics trafficking, human trafficking, the list goes on. Aliens who are human rights violators, war criminals, spies, or terrorists are all among the categories of aliens who, under the law, are supposed to be kept out of the United States. And if they do enter, they are to be removed. Additionally, our laws say that we should not allow in aliens who would likely become a public charge, only reasonable, and aliens who, if they worked, would provide unfair competition for American workers, and either displace Americans who were similarly employed or at the very least drive down the wages and working conditions of those Americans by providing lots of competition. You know, labor is a commodity, not unlike diamonds, not unlike petroleum. And when you flood the market with any commodity, generally, if you look at classic economics, it drives the price and the value of that commodity down. And the last thing we need to do is drive down wages and working conditions of Americans. Just this past week, CBS Radio reported here in New York City that the rate of homelessness, the number of homeless people living on the streets of New York, is at an all-time high. So I don't care that the NASDAQ went through the roof today. I care about how many people don't have a roof over their heads tonight. And that's something that, as Americans, we should all be focused on. And at the end of the day, if you want to be selfish about it, if you destroy the economy of the United States, you are taking with it the personal economic situation of every American who lives here. And if you destroy a country's economy, well, then you go to also destroy their ability to defend themselves. Go back to Sun Tzu's The Art of War, and he talks about the need for treasury, the need for wealth, to be able to support a standing army, to be able to buy the armaments. And when you look at the cost of that material today, that issue has never been more true, even though Sun Tzu wrote his book hundreds and hundreds of years ago. So let's realize that what we're really talking about is national security as well as the well-being of our fellow citizens. Nothing about that is about hate or xenophobia, simply about common sense and about doing what's right by our citizens and by our nation. And let's remember that America is, after all, arguably the most ethnically, racially, religious, from whatever perspective, we are the most diverse country on the planet. This is not about racism. It's not about any of that nonsense being spewed by journalists, politicians, and the others who stand to make huge profits through the exploitation of the immigration system, bringing in lots more tourists, bringing in lots more foreign students, and bringing in lots more foreign workers. It doesn't play well for our country or our citizens. And let's remember, the more foreign workers that we have in the country, the more money that they will send out of our economy. And I would argue that we could actually stop the rise in the national debt every year if we stop this insane practice of bringing in foreign workers. In point of fact, again, I did some research the past couple of weeks working on some articles, and we'll talk about those for whom I write those articles, again, for those of you new to the program. But we're bringing in many more foreign workers who are legally entitled to work in the United States than the number of new jobs that we are creating. And astonishingly, and I don't care which of the apparent candidates who have announced thus far, all of the Republicans who have announced have made it clear that if they are elected, they want to bring in lots and lots and lots more foreign workers. I mean, this is lunacy. This is sheer lunacy. You don't bring sand to the beach, and when there's a hole in the bottom of your boat, you don't drill more holes to hope the water is going to magically go out. You take reasonable steps that make sense. And where immigration is concerned, you will find no common sense, because common sense and morality and the law, well, they're impediments to the wealth of such miserable organizations as the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and their infamous Discover America partnership, because they have partnered with the hotel, hospitality, and travel industries, intent in flooding this country with ever more foreign visitors to create more revenue for those industries that have signed up with them. And in the short term, they will make more money. No argument about that. But give it a couple of years, and when you destroy the economy and you destroy America's ability to defend itself, then I want to know what the U.S. Chamber of Commerce plans to do. They're playing with fire, and so are these other people. And what they don't understand is that at some point, enough has to be enough. At some point, we are our brother's keeper and our sister's keeper, particularly if they are Americans. And that's something we need to do. So that's what we're going to talk about in broad terms. Of course, tonight my focus is going to be on national security, because I've written some articles. First of all, I've been writing for years for a terrific organization. They're headquartered in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. I've got some great friends out there, great organization, Californians for Population Stabilization, capsweb.org, C-A-P-S. capsweb.org is their website. They just posted my article earlier today that will be the central point of much of what I have to say this evening. Also, I have been writing for another wonderful organization, and that's the David Horowitz Freedom Center's Front Page Magazine. So Front Page Mag, California's Population Stabilization, capsweb.org. I also have some articles coming out in the next week or so for Progressives for Immigration Reform. If it's too much to remember, just punch in PFIR, Progressives for Immigration Reform, PFIR. Punch that into Google. It'll take you right to their website. And they are, as the name implies, to the left on politics. But let's remember, immigration, national security, border security, this isn't an issue of left or right, folks. This is an issue of right or wrong. Right or wrong. And if, in fact, you're truly concerned about the plight of American workers, then the immigration laws really are what you want enforced. My dad was a construction worker, a tradesman, a plumber. And, you know, my heart breaks. I lost him when I was 19, in part because he worked in the Navy shipyards. He was exposed to asbestos during the Second World War, and his three-pack-a-day Chesterfield habit did not help. But those guys out there and those gals out there every day, to this very day, the people who have come after my dad and his buddies, they're out there in the craziest weather, you know. You look at those road crews. You look at the guys doing the iron. You look at the plumbers and the concrete workers and the carpenters. It doesn't matter if it's 105 degrees out there. They're there. They're doing their job. And they do it better than anyone. And so in my heart of hearts, even though my parents saw to it that I had a college education, I'm as blue-collar as my dad. So let's put things into proper perspective. This isn't about being a conservative or a liberal or a Democrat or a Republican. No, this is about being American. And the other matter that I want to clear up before we get to the heart of what I want to talk about this evening is the First Amendment. You know, the First Amendment, everyone rattles it off. Freedom of press, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. Bang, bang, bang. They've got it all figured out. There's two other elements that most people seem to have forgotten or neglect or maybe never knew. The right to seek redress of grievances. And I got to tell you, if you don't have grievances with the way the world is today and the way that Washington is today, you better go to the doctor and have them check for a flatline EEG. You have to be brain dead. Or as the late great talk show host and my friend Terry Anderson used to roar into the microphone, if you ain't mad, you ain't paying attention. We certainly have grievances. But the other element of the First Amendment is the right for peaceable assemblage. Now, why on earth do you think the Founding Fathers thought it was so critical, that the First Amendment talks about the right for peaceable assemblage? Well, if it's not obvious to you, let me clue you in. They understood that the democratic process requires debate, discourse, discussion, and maybe the occasional screaming and yelling match. All they said is keep it peaceable. Keep your guns, your clubs, and your knives out of the dispute. Just use your words, as we tell kids when they're learning to speak. Use your words. And it's important that we use our words. And it's important that we have that discourse. But I have to tell you, I have never seen America the way it is today, where if someone disagrees with you on some political issue, that everyone is ready to jump down everybody else's throat. This is misplaced rage because of our government's corruption in Washington, because of political campaign finance. I think what that postal worker did, it was a unique way to go postal, I think you could say. But if you remember the guy in that unicycle, not the unicycle, the guy in the gyrocopter, kind of an aerial unicycle, you might say, landing on the lawn outside the Capitol to voice his protest over campaign finance. I think it was a bad idea the way he did it because he could have gotten himself killed. But I agree with him on the issue. You know, if a police officer stops you for speeding and you offer that officer $50 or $100, the odds are quite good you're going to wind up in handcuffs. But if you go to the mayor of that town and you give him or her a significant enough campaign contribution, I would say that the odds are very good that you'll get them to raise the speed limit. So what we're really looking at is the best government money can buy. And because of that, I think a lot of Americans are frustrated. They're angry. They don't know where to turn. And this is a creation by those people that we elected to represent us, protect our nation, and protect our families and the future of our kids. It doesn't get more crazy than that. And you know, full disclosure, I've been a lifelong registered Democrat. I've always voted as an independent. But I am not particularly proud of the Democratic Party. When Harry Reid could be interviewed, and they interviewed him about the issue, the journalists have been interviewing him, because he went to the floor of the United States Senate where he knew he was impervious to any lawsuit over slander or defamation of character, and engaged in character assassination of Mitt Romney. Now, I don't care what you think of Mitt Romney. I really don't care. The point of the matter was, Harry Reid made some scandalous accusations about Romney not paying taxes, and of course they were lies, and Romney lost the election. So there's Harry Reid, all smug and everything, and he's asked about, well, why did you go to the floor of the Senate and lie? And Reid wouldn't answer that reporter, but finally said, who won? Or words to that effect. So we've really gone to the point of real bleak, folks. Who won? It's not whether how you play the game, but whether you lose. Is that the deal? Because when I was a kid growing up, we were told it's not whether you win or lose, but how you play the game. Now it doesn't matter how you play the game as long as you win. This is kind of like, what do you mean I couldn't cheat on that science test or that math test? I need a good grade. I may not have the brain for it. I'm not talking about me when they say I, metaphorically or however you want to look at it. But the people that would argue on Harry Reid's side of the deal would say, sure, why not cheat? Did you get the degree? Did you get the job? That's all he would say. So what if I beat up Mitt Romney? So what if I insulted him and his family? So what if I impugned his integrity? So what if I'm a liar? Again, not me, but Harry Reid. Does it matter? Who won? Leaders are supposed to be moral leaders before they're any other kind of leader. Imagine kids watching that buffoon standing there with that smug little grin. Who won? So in other words, when a kid is thinking about whether or not to study for that test or whether or not to copy his homework from somebody else, he has Harry Reid as a role model. Doesn't matter how you swindle. Doesn't matter how you connive. Doesn't matter how much damage you do to the people around you. All that matters is winning. I've known drug dealers who had the same philosophy. Who cares if I ruin people's lives? Who's got that fancy Ferrari, you know? Who won? Well, Harry Reid is the loser. Because, really, when the history books are written, we know what he's going to be painted as being, and it's going to be accurate. Harry, I doubt you're listening, but if you are, history is going to remember you for being a swindler and a liar. Because that's not the way gentlemen or gentle ladies conduct themselves. We need politicians who offer us a vision for our country and for our children and for their future. We need politicians who stand by their oath of office. We need politicians who understand that to be elected to represent the citizens of this great nation is a tremendous honor and a tremendous responsibility. And Harry Reid wasn't up for it. What Harry Reid was up for was smearing mud and not just throwing mud, but metaphorically throwing grenades and knives at his opponents. It almost reminds me of Hillary Clinton saying, what difference does it make? What difference does it make? Four people are dead. The ambassador is dead. Three security officials with the United States government, U.S. citizens, all are dead. But they're dead. So what difference does it make? You see, this is where we've gone, folks. A very dark place that I could never have imagined when I was a kid. When I was a kid, when I wrote a letter to Mayor Wagner, who was the mayor of New York City, and I got a response, everybody in the school got all excited. Wow, a letter from the mayor. I wrote a letter to President John F. Kennedy when he was inaugurated, and I got a card with a facsimile signature of John F. Kennedy and the White House seal on it. And oh my gosh, my principal wanted to see it. The teachers were, because, wow, that came from the White House. That came from our leaders. That came from the people who represent we the people. My son graduated from high school last year, and there were no political speakers there. And they made a big point of saying that they did not want politicians coming to the school. And everybody cheered, myself included. Myself included. Because nobody wants crooks walking into their schools. Now, there are some very decent politicians. I don't want to tar everybody with the same brush. And many of the people that I really hold up as being really decent, honorable, moral leaders, people like Senator Jeff Sessions and Chuck Grassley, David Vitter, and my friend Lou Barletta, and there's others. I don't want people to think by inference that if I don't mention Louis Gohmert, congressman from Texas, another great guy. You know, this isn't to besmirch others. I'm just mentioning these folks off the top of my head because I have met with them, I have spoken with them, I've read what they've been writing, and I've been listening to what they've been saying. And they really stay above the fray. I testified at a hearing, a field hearing in Dubuque, Iowa, about almost 10 years ago, about comprehensive reform. And I had the privilege of sitting next to Senator Chuck Grassley. And it was remarkable because there was Senator Grassley telling everybody at the hearing, hey, look, I supported the Reagan amnesty. Biggest mistake of my career. How often do you see politicians who are man or woman enough to stand up and say, hey, you know what, I got it wrong? And that's why I'm here today to tell you that we must not make the same mistake twice. It blew me away. It blew me away. Senator Sessions quoted me on a number of occasions from the floor of the United States Senate with attribution. He wouldn't plagiarize me. See, when politicians plagiarize, they should be chastised for it. In fact, not only did he do it with attribution, but he then had the moral decency, because that's who Jeff Sessions is, to send me a certificate that my wife got all excited about, framed, and it now hangs in my bedroom, thanking me for a commentary that I wrote for the Washington Times, where I called comprehensive immigration reform the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. That's leadership. That's morality. The guy who sets the standard. It's my understanding, and I think I'm correct on this, that Jeff Sessions ran unopposed at his last election. Nobody had the chutzpah to stand up to this guy because he's so loved in Alabama, and for every right reason. He should be thoroughly loved by every American in this country, no matter what party you think you're affiliated with, because both parties stink. You know, I was on a radio show, and someone said, Mike, what do you think of the radio, of the parties? And I said, well, I look at the Democrat and Republican parties the way I used to look at the Medellin and Cali drug cartels when I was up at DEA intelligence. Competing, corrupt, crooked organizations that will do anything, and I mean anything, to control turf. Is that really what the Founding Fathers had in mind when they drew up that Declaration of Independence, when they drew up the Bill of Rights, when they got this country off to its first shaky start? You know, they were all men of clay. Everyone's got their faults and their flaws and their foibles and their vulnerabilities. But you look at the founding documents and you look at the lofty ideals, and then you look at slime buckets who could sit on TV and, you know, basically acknowledge, yeah, I lied, but does it matter? We won. That's a hollow victory. The only way we could win is by playing dirty tricks, because our standards are so screwed up and our goals are so screwed up that if we presented them to the American people, they wouldn't want any part of it. It was Nancy Pelosi saying, oh, you're not going to know what's in that health care bill till after it's voted on. Next time you need a refrigerator or a TV or a new car, would you be willing to buy from someone who said, hey, look, I can't tell you how much it costs. I can't tell you if the doors are on the left or the right, if it's a refrigerator, or how many cubic feet, or what the electrical usage is. Can't tell you. If it's a car, can't tell you if it's a stick or an automatic. Can't tell you anything. Can't even tell you what color it is or if it has a sunroof. But don't worry about it. I know you're going to like it. Just give me a blank check. I'll fill in the numbers. We'll deliver the car to your driveway. And by the way, there's a no-return policy. The Lemon Law does not apply. Is that the way we're supposed to do business in Washington? Do you wonder the cynicism? But see, we the people have the ability, folks, to demand better, to make certain that our voices are heard. And when you think, well, gee whiz, I'm just one person, go to the park. Look for those statues. You know, you've seen them. The statue of a man or a woman on horseback. You know why those statues were erected? To commemorate something of particular significance at a moment in history that that person who was honored by that statue did. These were individuals. When you think about the wars, horrific as they were, only a few names come to mind, whether it's the Revolutionary War, whether it's the First World War, the Second World War, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, to this very day. Only a few names stand out. The founding of this country, only a couple dozen names stand out. Millions of people involved, but a couple dozen names, if that many, stand out. See, individuals write history. Individuals write history. So when you have this depressed feeling of, oh, God, the whole world is coming down around my ears, I'm just one person, every flood starts with that first raindrop. You can be that raindrop. You could be that one voice that makes all the difference, that one person who takes that action that makes all the difference. And we need to unite on these issues, folks, because the perils we face are so significant, so severe. We have government that's totally out of control in Washington, both sides of the aisle. Every politician brags about, oh, I'm going to help create the jobs, you know. And then the Republicans, of course, say, well, government doesn't create the jobs. No, maybe not, but I would argue that they do sometimes. When John F. Kennedy stood there and said, I believe this nation should commit itself before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning safely to the earth, and that's about as close as I can get to his exact quote, companies that geared up created jobs to meet the demand created by that incredible vision of that incredible president of going to the moon. And we did it. What has traditionally been mission impossible for the rest of the world, for Americans, seems to very rarely be anything more than mission difficult. And then you hear the politicians talk about the country of exceptionalism, the United States. And in the very next breath, they say, oh, and by the way, we need to bring in hundreds and hundreds of thousands of more foreign workers from around the world so we can get the best and brightest over here. Well, if anyone's been listening, if this is the country of exceptionalism, this is a country of people, not so much mountains and rivers and lakes and so forth. And the American people, with all of its great diversity, are the leaders in the world. You don't bring sand to the beach. You don't bring exceptional workers to a country that has no shortage of exceptional workers, but we do have a country of exceptional liars who are seeking public office. Both parties. Both parties. Rand Paul had the brass during a TV appearance when he was interviewed on Face the Nation by Bob Schaefer. He actually said that he voted down comprehensive immigration reform, not because it was going to undermine national security, folks. But because it limited the number of high-tech visas for foreign workers. And I thought Ted Cruz was bad, wanting a 500% increase, wanting to go from the current 65,000 to 325,000. Rand Paul wants to take the door off the hinges altogether, and he point blank said, we shouldn't be limiting the number. Tens of millions of unemployed and underemployed Americans. Why in the world would you then pump hundreds of thousands more foreign workers into that labor pool that's overflowing with workers right now? This is a betrayal of America and Americans and the American dream and ultimately the American economy. Because right now, the remittances are having a tremendous impact, the money being wired out of the country by the foreign workers. Immigration is truly the key to so many of the challenges and so many of the threats that our nation and our citizens are facing today. And again, not a statement of xenophobia. We admit over a million lawful immigrants every year. We naturalize hundreds of thousands of new citizens every year. All I'm saying is that the system needs to have integrity. That's what this is all about. Earlier this week, I wrote an article for Front Page Magazine. And it was about the ineptitude at DHS that facilitates terrorist operations. The fact that we are allowing terrorists into our country. The fact that we have a political asylum program that has no integrity. And then you listen to the drivel coming out of the mouths of our so-called leaders. We're being told about sleeper cells comprised of homegrown Americans. Anybody who knows anything about terrorism, about national security, knows that Americans aren't sleepers. Sleepers has traditionally been a term applied to foreign nationals who enter a country in one way or the other, running the border, stowing away on a ship. During the Second World War, we saw the saboteurs who came here on German U-boats. They came in the dead of night, and they came through Miami or near Miami, and they came through Long Island. Intent on committing acts of sabotage. They were discovered. The Coast Guard did its job. The FBI took over. And all but three of these individuals were quickly put on trial, found guilty, and executed for crimes against the United States as enemy combatants. Two or three others were kept here. One was a naturalized citizen, if my memory serves correctly. The other one had been a resident of the country. So they had a real strong familiarity with the United States. And at least one of them got life in jail. Another one got something like 30 years in jail. But generally speaking, when you talk about sleepers, you're talking about foreign nationals. And it's remarkable because Ray Kelly, back when Faisal Shahzad, a naturalized United States citizen, tried to set off a car bomb in Times Square, Kelly referred to him as a classic example of a homegrown terrorist. He came here as a 20-year-old on a student visa. And a year before he attempted to set off that car bomb, he naturalized. How can you be homegrown when you come to America when you're 20 years of age? You see, this is all about subterfuge. This is about language that's meant to be Orwellian, nothing short of that. Because God forbid you should talk about immigration. God forbid you should talk about aliens. And by the way, the word alien isn't an insult. And I know I've said it before. I'm going to say it again. The term alien is a legal term that simply means any person, not a citizen or national, of the United States. It's not my definition. It's a definition in the Immigration and Nationality Act. That's that all-encompassing body of law that deal with immigration, with aliens coming to America, remaining here, becoming citizens, getting green cards, political asylum. It's everything you ever could imagine that deals with immigration is contained within the Immigration and Nationality Act. And so we've been seeing a string of individuals from the Middle East coming to America, and then within their communities, and the Somali community has been pretty bad on this one, although Faisal Shahzad was from Pakistan. We've had others come from Somalia. In fact, I was on Fox and Friends with Anna Koyman back on February 28th, taking a hard look at the Somali community in Minnesota. And I'd been there, in fact, because I went there for a full week of speaking engagements. And by the way, if any of you folks out there become aware of any such speaking engagements, you can reach me through my own personal website, michaelcutler.net. I'd be happy to talk to you, work out the arrangements, because this is what I have been doing. I was just in Washington earlier this week with Alan Freed Associates, the Speakers Bureau in D.C. I've been working with them for over a decade because this is about getting the information out there. MSNBC is not going to talk about this. They used to, but they've shut down. CNN, same deal. They won't talk about this in real terms. So we've got to get the word out there. So the problem that we have is that there's absolutely no integrity to any of the programs that they're running at immigration. And so we saw that with Faisal Shahzad from Pakistan. Now we have this guy from Somalia. And by the way, when I did my little drive around, and I was at a speaking event there that a state representative had arranged for me, I did a ride-along with the sheriffs. I visited the prisons. I took a hard look at that Somali community. It's a tight-knit, closed enclave. And we've seen a number of Somalis, as well as people from other countries, leave the United States to go fight in the Middle East. Progressives for Immigration Reform just put a report out there a couple of weeks ago, my report, the immigration component of the war on terror. It was about a naturalized citizen from Somalia, another one of those, who was a cab driver in Washington, D.C. And the concern the FBI had, because they posted him on the most wanted list of terrorists, is that because he drove a cab for many years in D.C., he had a real intimate familiarity with the layout of the city and where the infrastructure was, and the concern was that either he would return to the United States or he would train people in the Middle East, wherever, in Yemen, in Syria, about the layout of Washington and send them here to commit terrorist attacks against our capital. This is dangerous stuff. And what facilitated all this? He became a citizen. So when I saw the article in the news about how we suddenly had another individual who was naturalized, immediately my radar turned on. So what we have is on April 16th of this year, just a couple of weeks ago, in the Southern District of Ohio Eastern Division, a grand jury handed up a 3-count indictment against an individual by the name of Abdirahman Sheikh Mohammed, also known as Ayanli. And he was charged with two counts of providing material support to a designated foreign terrorist organization, another count of providing material support to terrorists, and finally, he was indicted for making false statements involving international terrorism. And this is a very significant case, because this guy became a naturalized United States citizen and obviously had to have lied on his application for citizenship, because Part 11 of that application, the form number, is the N-400. And if you look at the N-400, or if you go to my website, michaelcutler.net, or capsweb.org, or Front Page Magazine, you'll see the articles. And Part 11 of that application for citizenship asks the applicant about criminal history, about arrests for crimes that they were not convicted but nevertheless arrested for, because there are certain crimes that, you know, the accusation, even if you're acquitted, if there's strong enough evidence, could have an implication for your citizenship. And this also goes to the issue of good moral character. See, everyone makes a big deal, oh, we're fingerprinting them, you know, the applicants for citizenship. And in fact, when Bill Clinton was in the White House, they were found to have moved over 1 million applications for citizenship. Many of the fingerprints hadn't even come back. But there's a component called good moral character. In theory, when an alien seeks citizenship, an agent is supposed to go out and knock on doors and show photographs and ask the people, do you know Charlie Smith? Because he wants to be an American. And back when I was an agent, if some neighbor of Charlie's would say, well, he's okay, but you know, on Fridays when he gets that paycheck, he has this tendency to go to the local hooker house, and he hangs out with the hookers, and then he gets drunk, and he comes home at night really late. If his wife says anything, he beats her up. And I remember one day when he threw the cat out the window and killed the poor animal. And we've had cases like that. And even if the guy didn't have a conviction record, certainly that individual would not get United States citizenship, because anybody who could conduct himself that way probably should either be in Congress, forgive me, I just had to, but certainly should not be an American citizen. So this is where good moral conduct, GMC as it's known, comes in. And if you go to the citizenship, USCIS, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services Handbook, there's a whole section in the significance of good moral character. So now we're thrilled when they run fingerprints on somebody? What does that have to do with good moral character? You know, understand the way we have watered down our laws, in part because we're dealing with so many applications that the system can't deal with them. And, of course, Mr. Obama is doing everything he can possibly do to continue to flood the system to the breaking point, because he wants to break the immigration system. You know, he's sitting in that car, and he's standing on the gas, and he's standing on the brake in neutral, and he's about to drop it into drive and see if he can't make the transmission fall out. That's what he's doing to the immigration system. And this is very dangerous because of how important our immigration laws are. So we know how important it is, and we know that the way they're not doing their work over at Citizenship and Immigration Services, but now we've got the U.S. attorney becoming complicit in all this. Because here's a guy who had to have said that he had no involvement with terrorist organizations in order to naturalize. And yet, obviously, he did have an involvement. Now, it's not as though he naturalized 15 years ago and the statute of limitations ran out, and on top of it, he really became a changed person, and he went from being a nice guy to being a sympathizer with terrorists. You know, I'm sure there are cases like that. Fine, I understand that. But this is a guy that when you look at the information in the indictment, it becomes crystal clear that he naturalized 2 months before he left the country to go to the Middle East to fight on the side of the terrorists, to join his brother, who, by the way, was killed in combat, I believe it was in June of 2014. So this wasn't a joke. This was a guy who was deadly serious about going over there, committing acts of violence over in the Middle East, or coming back to America to commit acts of violence. And getting that U.S. citizenship certificate, and with it the U.S. passport, was an integral part of his overall plan. Let me, in fact, read to you this little segment from the indictment. Let's pull this up right here. All right. Well, you know what? Let's just read the whole darn thing, at least the first couple of paragraphs, just so you get the whole flavor. And, of course, again, you can go and read the article, and there's a link to the website so you can read the indictment at your leisure and really review it. But it's really important. Here's allegation number one. Abdirrahman Sheikh Mohammed, a.k.a. Ayanli, Mohammed, the defendant, resides in Columbus, Ohio. They say that to establish venue. Which court has jurisdiction, in other words. Then it says, Abdi Fattah Aden, and then they say Aden is the brother of Muhammad and resided in Columbus, Ohio, until he departed the United States in May 2013. Beginning in August 2013, Aden fought for al-Nusra Front, a designated foreign terrorist organization in Syria, until on or about June 3, 2014, when he was killed in battle. So the brother is Aden. The guy that they just grabbed now is Mohammed. And then we get to allegation number three. Beginning in at least September 2013 up to and including April 19, 2014, the defendant, Mohammed, while in the United States, exchanged private online communications with his brother Aden, in which the two discussed Mohammed's plan to also travel to Syria and engage in fighting there. During the course of these discussions, the following private online communications, among others, were exchanged. This is paragraph A. On or about September 3, 2013, Mohammed called Aden and Aden's companions al-Mujahideen and said that he was proud of Aden. Mohammed further told Aden to be a simple soldier and stated that shooting a rifle brings one closer to Jannah. Mohammed also expressed to Aden his desire to join you in the high ranks as a Mujahid. Now, allegation B. On or about January 28, 2014, Aden stated that he was planning to stay in a small town called Homs. Mohammed asked whether he should go straight to Adan's location or stop through Kenya first, and Aden replied, Mohammed should come straight to Adan's location or Aden's location. And then we get to C, and this is really, really important. This goes back to this thing about the citizenship and the passport. On or about February 20th, 2014, Aden and Mohammed discussed Mohammed's travel. Aden asked how Mohammed's papers are coming along. Mohammed responded that he obtained citizenship and is now seeking a passport. Aden asked when Mohammed will come, and Mohammed responded that it will be roughly a month. He was waiting for his U.S. passport. How could he have answered questions honestly that ask about whether or not he has had any contact, any connection with any foreign organization, because they start out with that, and then with any terrorist organization? Understand what we're talking about. Becoming a United States citizen 2 months before he left the United States, given the conversations, given the proximity and time, his U.S. citizenship was granted to him when he lied on the application. He had to have said no to the question, have you ever been or are you now involved with any terrorist organization and so forth. Why was he not indicted for that? Why did the U.S. attorney ignore that? Now, yes, the U.S. attorney could issue a superseding indictment, a follow-up, and add more charges. Sometimes that happens. But why the delay? Because, you see, this isn't just about one more count, and you're thinking, well, this guy Cutler was an immigration agent, so maybe his ego is in the equation because he feels slighted. I don't feel slighted. Not in the least. But here's the reason that I'm so adamant about this. This is why I believe there should be a congressional hearing into this. We are fighting a war on terror, folks. People who want to come here and kill us. People who have tried to do just that. And people who have succeeded. 9/11, the two attacks of 93, the Boston Marathon bombing. This is serious stuff. You want to use every weapon at your disposal. Okay. Think about how easy it would have been for the U.S. attorney to say, you see this statement, you see the certificate of naturalization, you see what he said here, you see where he signed his name, prosecute the guy for lying. not just to give him more jail time, which he may or may not get as a result of that, but here's the critical issue. The United States does not deport its own citizens, ever. In fact, when people arrive at the airport, for example, remember I started my career back in 71 as an immigration inspector, when I went to Border Patrol Academy, which is where all immigration enforcement personnel were trained, whether they were in the Border Patrol or not, they made a distinction between the way that we handled U.S. citizens and aliens seeking entry. Aliens seeking entry into the country, even if they have green cards, even if they're lawfully admitted permanent resident aliens, are inspected. U.S. citizens are examined. Now, this isn't a minor point. Words have significance. Words have significance. Remember Bill Clinton saying, you know, depends on your definition of the word is? Well, here's some more words that have significance. When an alien seeks entry, under the law, you'd never know it to see what this administration has been doing, but the alien has the burden of proof to prove to that inspector at that port of entry that he or she is not coming to violate the law, not coming as a non-immigrant but planning to stay forever, not coming as a tourist but planning to work. So the burden of proof is upon the alien. But for that inspector, as soon as he or she recognizes that the person seeking entry is a citizen of the United States of America, we go from inspection to examination. Why? Because we cannot, under any circumstances, deny a United States citizen who still has citizenship entry into the United States. This is your home. And you have every right to be here. Now, there may be a warrant outstanding, in which case we're happy to take you into custody for the local police or the FBI or DEA or whomever. But the one thing we cannot do is say to an American, we're not letting you in. That is a huge, large economy size no-no. Can't be done. It would be totally illegal to do that. Citizens cannot be denied entry into their own country here in the United States. That's the kind of country we have. But in the case of a naturalized citizen, if it can be shown that the alien got citizenship by lying about a material fact, then in the case of this individual, Muhammad, certainly lying about involvement with terrorist organizations is not just a material fact, but it's a material fact of galactic importance. Because lying on that question under those circumstances not only constitutes a very serious felony, but would also constitute grounds for prosecuting that person for lying on that citizenship certificate. And once stripped of citizenship, that alien reverts back to alien, subject to deportation. Now, when this knucklehead went overseas, he was trained. And according to the material that's available, he was trained in how to burglarize houses to look for guns. And specifically, why guns? Because his instructions were to seek to find American soldiers here in the United States and assassinate them. Seek to find police officers, federal law enforcement, kill them. Maybe take out a prison. Come to America and wreak havoc. Kill lots of people. Why would you not want to charge that kind of a person with that kind of a background and that kind of an orientation with a charge that, if upheld at trial or by plea bargain, would result in that alien being expelled from the United States and sent packing? I don't want people wandering around this country who are so blatant that they're just going out there saying, yeah, I was going to kill me a soldier. And you don't want this guy removed from the United States? If anybody should be deported from the United States of America, Muhammad should be. And what happened? God only knows, because there is nothing in the file that I could see that points to why he was not charged with committing fraud on his application for citizenship. So I fear that he will ultimately wind up the gift that keeps on giving. If we don't get rid of him, he stays here. He's a continuing threat to our soldiers, to law enforcement, to the average American. Do we really want him here? We have a way of getting rid of him. That way is to add the charge of naturalization fraud, and someone definitely needs to be made accountable to explain why that charge was not pursued. We need to apply pressure to the administration, and we need to apply pressure to our own elected representatives and say to them, hey, listen, this guy's a terrorist. He's bad news. He was trained overseas. He came back intent on carrying out terrorist attacks and killing lots of Americans, including soldiers and law enforcement, maybe taking over a prison and killing people there. He wants to be a killing machine in our country, and we need to get rid of him. He is not going to do anything good for America by staying here, and there is a remedy, and it's not just in law, it's in case law. I've been involved with cases like this myself in my career. And this is what we need to do, folks. We need to look for cases like that, and we need to make the government accountable. It would be unconscionable for this guy to be turned loose after he does jail time, presuming, of course, he's found guilty. If he's not found guilty, then that's a whole other story. But presuming that the U.S. attorney was very cautious, as they tend to be, and very careful, and said, oh, this is a slam dunk, I'm going to prosecute this guy, okay. And if the judge fails, so be it. But if the judge succeeds, we can then take this guy's passport away and seek his deportation from the United States. And that's what we should be doing, using immigration not as a weapon against ourselves, but we need to be using immigration as a weapon against the people who would kill us. What a novel thought. Actually making the government live up to President Abraham Lincoln's lofty ideal of a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And this guy Muhammad is just one of many. But when I saw this case, and then of course a week later, we had more people from Somalia arrested, 4 in Minnesota, 2 more down on the border, and I believe it was California. Why aren't we using the immigration laws advantageously for our side? This is vital. And this is the kind of thing that as Americans, we have every right to petition the government, seek redress of grievances, and say to the administration, why in the world did the U.S. attorney not think it appropriate or worthwhile to bring that extra charge? And I could tell you, I've been in those situations. In fact, I remember we were doing a narcotics investigation up at the FBI. I had a desk in the squad. And I don't remember if this guy was a Colombian or a Dominican. I'm 90% sure that he was Colombian. And I don't know what went wrong, because when I went through his immigration file, again, you cannot naturalize if you have an extensive criminal history. This guy had a stack of what they call, you know, commitments, where he had been put in jail, did his time, got out of jail for assault, for drugs, for weapons. And you would have thought, slam dunk, take his citizenship. And all the legal actions took place over in New Jersey. And by the way, after he got out of jail, while he was still pending sentencing on yet another case, that's when we naturalized him. I mean, it's just astonishing. So I walked the file, or drove the file over to New Jersey. It was a rainy, miserable day. I'll never forget it. The U.S. attorney's wife was about to give birth. He didn't want to hear anything about anything. And he said, well, we're charging him with drug trafficking. I said, yes, but I want to strip this guy of his citizenship. And he just shrugged his shoulders and said, oh, we can't be bothered. Oh, we can't be bothered. What does that even mean? Why can't we be bothered? Citizenship is a huge issue. It's the highest honor that a country can bestow upon a foreigner. It opens up the keys not only to the front door of the United States, but it opens up the keys in a very real sense to the world. That U.S. passport is so critical. I have to read just a couple of quick passages here. And, you know, when you look at this, it really makes you angry, because you say to yourself, how on earth does our government function? Where are the priorities and who's establishing them? Problem. You see? We have got to make government accountable. So, here, this is a quote that I think is really worthwhile. This is the 9/11 Commission, I believe. Before 9/11, no agency of the U.S. government systematically analyzed terrorist travel strategies. Had they done so, they could have discovered the ways in which the terrorist predecessors to Al-Qaeda had been systematically but detectably exploiting weaknesses in our border security since the early 1990s. We found that as many of as 15 of the 19 hijackers were potentially vulnerable to interception by border authorities. Analyzing their characteristic travel documents and travel patterns could have allowed authorities to intercept 4 to 15 hijackers, and more effective use of information available in the U.S. government databases could have identified up to 3 hijackers. Looking back, we can also see that the routine operations of our immigration laws, that is, aspects of those laws not specifically aimed at protecting against terrorism, inevitably shaped Al-Qaeda's planning and opportunities. Because they were deemed not to be bona fide tourists or students, as they claimed, 5 conspirators that we know of tried to get visas and failed, and 1 was denied entry by an inspector. We also found that had the immigration system set a higher bar for determining whether individuals are or who or what they claim to be, and ensuring routine consequences for violations, it could potentially have excluded, removed, or come into further contact with several hijackers who did not appear to meet the terms for admitting them as short-term visitors. Then says this, our investigation showed that 2 systemic weaknesses came together in our border system's inability to contribute to an effective defense against the 9/11 attacks. A well-developed counterterrorism measure as a part of border security and an immigration system not able to deliver on its basic commitments, much less support counterterrorism. These weaknesses have been reduced, but are far from being overcome. And now here's the recommendation from the 9/11 Commission. Targeting travel is at least as powerful a weapon against terrorists as targeting their money. The United States should combine terrorist travel, intelligence, operations, and law enforcement in a strategy to intercept terrorists, find terrorist travel facilitators, and constrain terrorist mobility. So understand just how important all this is, folks. So you look at the 9/11 report, you look at how they could have naturalized this guy with all this going on in his background. If they really did the proper investigation, he never should have gotten his citizenship. But having given him citizenship, you then have a U.S. attorney refusing, apparently, to prosecute because he lied on that application. I mean, think about that. Think about how crazy that is. I also referenced a press release that I used for an article for Progressives for Immigration Reform. You see the same story emerging. So how in the world do you have a federal government that doesn't want the states to help enforce immigration laws, that said, we want to do it by ourselves, and then, of course, they don't do it at all? They create so many opportunities for the system to be flooded with more people than anybody can deal with. This is Lucy at the Bonbon Factory on steroids. And there's no justification. There's absolutely no justification. And it was said by the 9/11 Commission that for terrorists, travel documents are as important as weapons. As weapons. So why then, in the wake of 9/11, in the wake of all that we know, why isn't the U.S. attorney going after Muhammad for not only lying on his application for citizenship, but I'm willing to bet that he lied on his application for a U.S. passport? Load the slate. Hammer this guy into the ground. And the longer we have him behind bars, the happier I am, because you know he's probably just going to sneak back into the United States, go back out there and start shooting at our soldiers or our allies. So every day he's sitting in jail is a day that we don't have to worry about where he is or what he might be doing. If I was the prosecutor, I would want to get this guy indicted for spitting on the sidewalk and not throwing out his toenail clippings. You want to throw the sink at him, just the way the prosecutors did a generation or two ago with Al Capone, the guy they couldn't touch for murder or extortion or bribery. He went down in flames because of evading taxes on his booze and on his profits. Why don't we look at that role model and say, look, immigration is a powerful tool. And not just to screw Americans out of their jobs, and not just to fill hotel rooms and airplane seats, but immigration laws can provide that really important layer of protection that's so vital, especially with everything that's going on today, folks. So where do we go from here? I'm glad you asked. It's super important that you call your congressman, that you call your two senators, that you go online, that you go to capsweb.org, that you go to Front Page Magazine, that you find my articles, that you forward them to every friend and neighbor you have, and you ask them to do the same thing. Take that and send it off to your congressmen and your senators and demand to know why there was no charge being added to the indictment about immigration fraud. I think this would be a perfect topic for a congressional hearing. There's got to be accountability. There's got to be accountability before another terrorist attack befalls this country and our citizens. One of the things that upsets me the most about 9/11 was I had done a hearing as an expert witness 4.5 years before 9/11 about visa fraud and immigration fraud. The Clinton administration did absolutely nothing. But what difference does it make? And now we're being told by the Republicans, well, once we secure that Mexican border, we can give millions of people identity documents. Go back to what I just said about how travel documents to a terrorist is as important as a weapon. You want to give people identity documents when they snuck into the country? They evaded an inspections process that's supposed to keep the bad guys out of the United States? What could possibly go wrong? This guy in particular came back here trained, ready, willing, and eager to kill soldiers, ready, willing, and eager to kill law enforcement, take out a prison, some other high-density venue. Maybe he'd wake up one morning and say, hey, I'm going to go hit the mall, you know? Not because I need a new pair of Nikes, but because I really want to hit the mall. This is crazy. And what we want to do with people like this, and I don't even think he's a people, is to put his rear end in jail. And when every last minute of his sentence is served, if he's still breathing, I want him on an airplane the hell out of here. I don't want him here. I don't want him to stay here. I don't want him walking into a restaurant one day and deciding that he's going to take out some people just because. He's a threat to our well-being, folks. What more does this guy need to do to convince our leaders, so-called, that he desperately, and I mean desperately, needs to be deported from the United States? It's inexcusable, utterly, completely, totally inexcusable that this guy, at least to date, has not been indicted and charged with lying on his application. Imagine how much better we'd be if we could get every one of these nitwits off the street, the ones who want to back terrorist organization to kill lots of Americans. You know, it's just so frustrating because as an agent, once an agent, always an agent, I opened up that indictment and I saw what was there. And you ask yourself, what are we doing? Why do we spend over $3 billion a year inspecting passengers and cargo seeking entry into the United States if at the end of the day we're told it doesn't matter how you get here? That was what Loretta Lynch said during her confirmation hearing until Chuck Schumer took her aside, and then suddenly she had that epiphany. Whoops, I shouldn't have said that. Whoops. Why are we taking down our shields at the worst possible moment of human history to date? This threat of terrorists that want to blow up buildings and blow up trains and blow up airplanes. why would we want to give them the capacity to easily move among us in this country? That's what we're doing. And why do you think, by the way, he wanted to get that U.S. passport before going to Syria? Because you travel around the world on a Somali passport, and the border people look at that and they go, oh, a guy from Somalia. Oh, I wonder what he's up to. But by traveling on a U.S. passport, he lowered the anxiety levels of those border officials palpably. They looked at that and said, oh, he's an American. He must be okay. He must be okay because he's got that U.S. passport. Never mind that he lied through his teeth to get it. Never mind that we become so inept and incompetent that we'll give one to anybody. We'll give one to anybody. We have to wake up, folks. We live in a very dangerous era. The sword of Damocles, in this case, the sword of Damocles of terrorism, hangs over our head. We need to work as a big family, the citizens of this country. I don't care if you're from the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, the Liberal Party, the Conservative Party, the Beer Party, you know, I don't care. Let's work together. Let's make sure that the politicians in Washington understand who runs the show, who's in charge. The Founding Fathers thought that the highest title in our government here in the United States was that of citizen. Not president, not senator, not congressman, citizen. We unite and we make this case strong on this individual, we can set a precedent. We can set a precedent. There won't be a U.S. attorney in this country who won't be looking over his or her shoulder when they make decisions that are not in the best interest of our country and our citizens. Let's take this on as a science project. Let's make certain that this guy gets indicted. You know, for all the talk, we need to go here and we need to do that and we need to march and we need to picket. Here's an objective and it's easily definable, folks. We need to get to our elected representatives and demand. And I mean, do it politely, be civil, but be clear. There's no wavering here. This guy needs to be criminally charged with lying on a citizenship application so he can be subject to deportation, removal, presuming he's convicted when he gets out of jail. Presuming he's convicted. These are allegations to date. Let's remember that. But the allegations that are listed are missing one very important allegation, and that allegation is lying on a certificate of citizenship. Because if, or his application for citizenship, because it goes back to why he was indicted in the first place. So you look at the timing, and you look at all the evidence, and there's no other conclusion that one could possibly come to except the fact that this individual lied on his application, if you believe the other allegations. That's what they've laid out the case. Now we need to make certain they follow through. This guy needs to be stripped of his United States citizenship. And I'm asking you, everybody who's listening to my program, to work with me on this. Let's get some positive result. Let's show what we, the people, can do when we put our minds and our hearts into it. There is no reason that somebody who is an enemy of our country should have the privilege of citizenship of this country, should be able to remain in this country where he will continue to always pose a threat, again, if the allegations are true. The evidence is pretty compelling, at least to this old agent's eyes, and I'm sure when you look at the allegations and you look at what I've provided in my articles, I hope you come to the same conclusion. So I'm asking you to get on the same page, get on the same team, get a hold of as many of your friends as possible, send emails cross-country. Let's make this our project. Let's make certain that this is one instance where we the people win, where we the people get our way, where we the people make our government accountable and responsive to our demands. Our demands. Abraham Lincoln was right. This is then a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. I want to thank you for spending the evening with me, at least the hour and, well, just over 10 minutes. It's always good to join you. I look forward to seeing you here again next week at the same time, in the same place. And who knows, maybe by then we'll be hearing something out of Washington if we all put our heads together and we make this case, if you will, and we force the issue. We can't be passive. Passivity is going to get us nowhere. Passivity is dangerous, especially in this dangerous era. Time to roll up our sleeves and get to work. Let's make certain that our elected representatives know who we are, and let's also make certain that they come to the realization that we're not as stupid as they hope that we are. Remember, everybody, democracy is not a spectator sport. Have a great weekend. See you next week. So long.